Welcome to the Habit Mechanic Podcast. To help you finish this year strongly and get ready for a successful 2024, we're re-releasing every podcast we've recorded so far that takes a deep dive into the Habit Mechanic book. The episode's coming up in a few moments. Remember, if you want to get your business off to a great start in January, get in touch to discuss how our Habit Mechanic keynotes or workshops can equip your people with practical skills that help them build super habits in 5 minutes. Or if you want to earn £100,000 per year working part-time by launching your own coaching business, we guarantee to help you do that in just 13 hours. Get in touch with us today to learn more about becoming a certified Habit Mechanic coach who can transform people's lives and is recognized as a world leader in the field. For more details, contact us via the website. The link is in the podcast notes. Or if you want to feel better and do better every day, download the Habit Mechanic University app from your app store. Enjoy the episode.
Hello, Habit Mechanics. It's Dr. John Finn here. Welcome to another live episode of the Habit Mechanic podcast. Today, we're going to talk about emotions and how to get better at regulating them and why that's, in my opinion, the most important skill we can learn. I'm joined today by my colleague and friend, Andrew Whitelam. Andrew, how are you?
Yeah, hi there, John. Great to be with you again on a live podcast. Looking forward to this one. Very much, of course, we're basing our discussions on chapter 14 of the Habit Mechanic book, the full title of which is The Secret Science of Fulfilling Your Potential, Emotional Regulation. It's a short chapter in the book, but there's so much science in there. But in the Tougher Minds way, it's science made practical and accessible and very engaging. So that's the way we're going to make it in this podcast too, as well, I'm sure. I want to start off by asking you a question, John. I mean, by all means, put me on pause for a moment if you want. But I remember when I first heard the term by working with you, I think it's really useful to ask, what is emotional regulation and how does it function for us as humans?
Well, that's two questions, Andrew.
It is technically, yes.
And I'm going to just, before I answer those questions, so we're live streaming the Habit Mechanic University app, and just remind people that they can ask us questions. We're taking live questions, and that if you want to join future live episodes where you can ask us questions in real time, then join us for future episodes in the Habit Mechanic University app. So emotional regulation, yeah, it's one of those terms I suppose we hear a lot. We might have one understanding of what it means, which might be different to an understanding other people have. For me, well, emotions are really chemicals in your brain, but I'm pretty compelled by, the research I was reading, particularly around my PhD work, that emotions are the dominant, or what we might call the immediate biological signals that are primal in what we think and do. So the way I think about it is that emotions are the primary thing that get our attention. So we could say emotions drive our attention. And what we know is that then our attention drives our learning, because what we pay attention to, both what we're thinking about, but also what we physically do, it changes our brain. So via that process called neuroplasticity. So emotions are the primary thing that gets our attention. So we can say emotions drive our attention. And we also know that attention drives learning. So that's why emotional management, emotional regulation, and this is in previous episodes, we've talked about hacking helpful attention control. For me, my favorite scientific way of expressing helpful attention control is emotional regulation, because it's recognizing, well, wait a minute, these emotions I'm experiencing right now, they're not helping me. So I need to do something about them. I need to manage them. I need to regulate them so that I experience some different emotions that are more helpful for me. So emotions, they're always there, they're ever present. And sometimes I hear people say, I had no emotions. Well, that's also an emotional reaction. You just don't think of what you're experiencing as emotions, but they are absolutely emotions. They're always there. They're either helping us or they're being unhelpful for us. And when we notice that they're not helping us, we can do something about it via emotional regulation. And that's a skill that we can learn how to get better at.
Yeah, and perhaps it's worth reiterating, you talked about that equation, emotion drives attention, which drives learning. And of course, you've said before, we've talked before about learning new things is so crucial for us. But yet it's hard in the modern context of the attention economy where we face so many distractions. So it is that idea of being able to focus, I suppose, in real common parlance, in an uneducated, slightly uneducated term, that's so important, John.
We're being bombarded by things, and there's a fairly common understanding in the human body, what I would think of as the physical body. So I studied physiology, I taught physiology at university level, and there's a common understanding of something called homeostasis within the body. The body's trying to regulate itself. It's regulating the temperature, etc. There's automatic processes going on. Well, actually, the way I think about it and understand it, there's an emotional homeostasis going on as well. We're trying to feel good. That's what we're ultimately trying to do. So when we don't feel so good, our brain makes us aware of it through our emotions. And when you are aware of something, it means it's being pushed into your prefrontal cortex. So when, if we go back to the lighthouse brain model, which we've done an entire podcast on, but we unpack in a chapter 12 of the book, when we become conscious of something, it's when Hugh, our horribly unhelpful emotions, nudges willpower up in the lighthouse library to say, look, I've got a problem down here. So we've got all these emotions whirling around all the time. We're just not always conscious of them. But when we get consciousness of them, it's when we can start to intercede and do something. And I suppose people are very familiar with the idea of learning maths equations or learning how to spell or to write essays or to use the new software that's come into the business that's powered by generative AI. We don't necessarily think so much about learning how to get better at regulating our emotions. And this is the entire backbone of the habit mechanic approach. My PhD hypothesis was that I think learning how to get good at regulating your emotions is probably the main predictor in someone's life for how healthy, happy, and at their best they're going to be. And the first thing I had to demonstrate was that people could actually learn how to regulate their emotions, because often we think that people are fixed in their capabilities. So the idea that a leopard never changes its spots, but now science has moved much beyond that. We understand the nature plus nurture concept. So really the heart of becoming a habit mechanic is learning how to get better at regulating your emotions. But we just don't always talk of it in that very basic term, because I think, well, I know, having taught tens of thousands of people now, that emotional regulation can be quite a confusing term. So we've built the habit mechanic language around it, but the heart of it is emotional regulation and learning how to get better at it.
Yeah, great. Thanks for that, John. And I think that helps people understand where emotional regulation fits in, if you like, into them as people. It certainly did for me when you have previously given that type of explanation. Just to try and help further understanding then of emotional regulation more. In the book, you talk about there are different types of emotional regulation, explicit and implicit, and they sort of function differently. That's we know this, you point out in the book, because of brain science. If you could talk to us a bit more about these type of insights, if you would, because again, I think that's so useful for people's understanding.
Yeah, so there are sites in the brain that we use to calm other sites in the brain. So if we think about Q-lives, which are the powerful limbic regions of the brain, and also our prefrontal cortex where willpower lives, we can use our prefrontal cortex in very specific parts of it, but that reside in the prefrontal cortex area of the brain, to calm down Hugh and the ape brain and the limbic regions of the brain. And those parts of the brain that we use to do that are, to all intents and purposes, like muscles. So the more you activate those areas, the stronger they become. So when you activate parts of your brain, you're essentially running electricity through it. And those areas of the brain, they strengthen and they change and they get stronger. But equally, the same thing happens with the limbic regions of the brain. So the amygdala, which is the often seen as the heart of the fight-flight response system, sort of our fear system, that can get strengthened as well. You know, we can see people that have been in extreme stress situations, like in war zones, that there's a thickening of sites within the amygdala area, for example. So our brain is changing all the time, depending on what we practice. So we can all recognize a conscious, deliberate effort to stop ourselves doing something or thinking something that we know is not helpful for us. So what we might, you know, an example might be that you go into the cafe and you see a lovely chocolate muffin and you're thinking that looks really good. And our brain's telling us that's going to be really good. But you catch hold of yourself and say, well, wait a minute, I'm on a diet at the moment, so I'm not going to have the chocolate chip muffin. So we are regulating ourselves in that moment, but it's very effortful and very deliberate. So that's an example of explicit emotional regulation. And, you know, you could say, you could do a similar example about how you're thinking. So you could notice yourself dwelling on something that had happened this morning. And you say, wait a minute, that's not helpful to dwell on that. I'm going to think about this other stuff instead. I'm going to use my little fab framework and think about, well, what was I fortunate to be able to do? How can I adapt my goals? Because the thing I thought was going to happen doesn't happen. What are the benefits of what I'm learning? So they're explicit examples. But the more we practice this, I suppose, emotional regulation repetitions, the stronger we are at managing those impulses. And the more automatic we're able to respond, to the point where we start to develop an implicit emotional regulation response, which is maybe not completely effortless, but it takes far less energy and effort than the explicit response. So, and that's the, I suppose, the engine of rewiring your habits, is that you start by, okay, I want to build a habit of going for a run every morning. You start by doing it. Oh, can't be bothered with this. Oh, it's freezing outside. Oh, I'd just rather have a lie in. But you make yourself go out and you get to the point where you're not magically going out of the door, but it's much easier to get out of the door because you've practiced this and you've automated the thinking and the doing connected with it. It may be that you want to change your diet. Previously, when you went to the supermarket, you were always in the crisps or the chips for our American listeners, and the chocolate aisle, you're always there and you're getting your treats for the weekend. And you've identified that's not something that's helpful for you. But the next time you go to the supermarket, you still wander up the aisle and you're sort of looking, and maybe you grab one thing as a treat. And then maybe if the next few times you go past the aisle and you get drawn to it. But eventually you might not even go down the aisle anymore because you've just, stopped buying that type of stuff. You've built a different habit. So emotional regulation really is the engine that we can use to change our behavior. And the more we practice resisting, the better our brain gets at it. But in order to really supercharge change, we've got to activate the nine action factors as well, which make it easier to resist the thing, the old behavior that we don't want to do anymore.
Yeah, and I'm going to ask you in a moment about proactively managing and becoming better at managing and regulating emotions. But just to say, the scenario you've outlined, it might be helpful for people to think this would apply then if in a work context, for instance, if somebody, I don't know, sent you an email or a message or a memo or something, and it you didn't particularly like the content, or you felt the content was threatening, you might learn to become more considered in your response. You might learn to not have the same emotional, should we say, reaction to it that you previously have had, which would be damaging and unhelpful to you. Just taking that specific sort of office context that maybe quite a few people might have experienced.
If you want to fulfill your potential or help other people fulfill their potential so you can feel great and get the rewards and respect you deserve, then I want to give you a free physical copy of my new best-selling book, because you deserve to know the truth. The most important things for fulfilling your potential are not tips, tricks, hacks, therapy, coaching, meditation, breathwork, goal setting, journaling, or finding your why. I know it sounds irrational because we're so used to hearing about using these things to help us fulfill our potential. But these approaches are outdated and ineffective, and they are based on a big lie.
To find out more and get your free physical copy of Dr. John Finn's best-selling book, The Habit Mechanic, go to tougherminds.co.uk.
Yeah, so that's connected to stress management and, the fight or flight type response. And, we have, I think there's 37 tools in the book, and the app, and they're all about regulating your emotions better. So there are some hyper-specific tools and theories that we can dive into, like that stress response example, that are absolutely emotional regulation examples. Whatever we're doing right now, whatever behaviors we're displaying today and habits, that's all driven by what we've been practicing. So we can change those behaviors and habits by practicing something different. But practicing something different is difficult because our brain doesn't like to do different things. It resists doing different things that don't give it immediate rewards. So that's where we've got to get the behavioral science on our side. There's an interesting insight. So I was reading a new neuroscience book just last night about microdosing and the work at Imperial College London that's world leading in that area. And those drugs, they change your brain function ultimately. But it was interesting how the professor who wrote that book, he was just saying that, even the new technology we have in the world now, our brains are still 10 times more efficient and effective than any technology we understand. And that just shows how wired our brain is to be efficient and effective and to resist expending energy on things that do not give it immediate gratification. I just thought that was really interesting, and it underpins what a lot of what we're saying in relation to our brazen one operating rule is to save energy, and that's why it habituates everything. But we do have a little bit of consciousness which we can start to use to change how we regulate our emotions or to strengthen our implicit emotional regulation in a way that's more helpful for us. But we've got to use the behavioral science as well, and habit building plans and the 9 action factor models, etc.
Yeah, thanks for that, John. Yeah, just a reminder to people, this is the live Habit Mechanic podcast inside the Habit Mechanic University. Please do post any questions that you have in the chat in the Habit Mechanic University app, and we'll ask John to answer them later in this podcast. Please do have a think about some questions and submit them. We're going to talk in more depth about this, and also keep discussing the idea of how we can become thinking ourselves happier, if you like, how we can start to use this insight into emotional regulation to do that. And that's coming later in the podcast. But John, I know in the book you share a fascinating example of somebody, as you put it, taking responsibility and regulating their emotions after an incident, an event in their life that would, for many people, well, it was catastrophic for the person concerned, but might also have left a massive emotional scar. And this is Christina Vogel, a German elite cyclist. I think she was a record breaker and had been to Olympic Games. And you share her story in the book, which is really quite remarkable. If you could just reappraise us of that, because I think it does make so much of what we've said tangible and real, and it's also an absolutely amazing human story too.
Yeah, it's I'm trying to think when this happened. So it was June 2018, so not so long ago. And you know, the story is a training accident where this world champion cyclist, Christina Vogel, crashed and lay on the floor, recognizing there's a serious problem here. And essentially, she'd damaged her spine and she was never able to walk again after that crash. So literally within seconds, her life absolutely changed. And another world record breaking cyclist, Chris Hoy, went out to Germany to interview her. It was a BBC, I think it was a documentary, and I was just amazed by her ability to regulate her emotions around this very, very quickly. But I wasn't so surprised by that, because to get to the levels of performance she's produced, that's also underpinned by emotional regulation, you know, which is basically allows us to delay short-term gratification and keep persisting. So, yeah, she says, and it's also worth pointing out that we actually, I think 2 or 3 episodes ago, we've actually released this chapter in full as a podcast. So you can go back and you can listen to these insights as they are described in the audiobook a few podcasts back. But she says, and I'm reading from the book here, asking why does not bring you any further, you know. So why me? Why is it me? This has happened to you. Why am I not going to be able to walk again? So she says, I want to get back into life, not depend on a lot of help. I must use this strength I had in competitions for life. And then she says, this is the toughest challenge ever, but what do you do? Lie in bed and do nothing each day, or take it on and achieve what you can? I am still happy to be here, and my situation could have been worse. It could have been I have no movement in my arms. So that is I mean, I show a video clip of this in presentations, and you know, people regularly cry because it is so emotive. Saying, "Well, you know, it could have been worse. I could have been completely paralyzed." And then she talks about, you know, what her new goals are, things she's got to look forward to. She explains how she's really fortunate that she's got this adapted car and a new house, and she's got all this support, and she's looking at another sport. It shows her trying to play, thinking, well, I could maybe compete in this sport, you know, as an Olympian. So it's recognizing those emotions that are getting her attention. This is rubbish. It's horrible. You know, I'm not saying she thought this, but do I want to be here anymore? I reckon these emotions are not helping me. So I'm going to do something about that. I'm going to change the meaning of this situation for me. And, you know, meaning-focused coping is something that's embedded into how we, in our approach, help people to manage stress and build confidence, which at its heart is emotional regulation, but we just don't explicitly call it that as we're describing that particular approach. But yeah, I think the Christina's story is amazing, you know, and I'm sure it was actually interesting. Another time I was giving a talk somewhere, and the keynote speaker before me, I can't remember what had happened, but he'd had some sort of life-changing accident, and he was giving a story about, more of a personal narrative about how he'd recovered and how he'd changed his outlook on his life. And it was, you know, a really phenomenal personal biographical story that he gave about himself. And then afterwards I gave the Tougher Minds presentation, of which emotion regulation is integral, or is at the epicenter of it. And I remember he came up to me after and said, "You've just given a scientific framework as to what I've been saying. Like, this is exactly what I've been doing." So yeah, there are other stories out there like Christina, but I think Christina's is particularly compelling in relation to understanding the power of emotional regulation, is that we can manage these things. They're not all powerful. We have much more power over them than we give ourselves credit for. You know, when we're looking out into the world and thinking how unfair it is and how everybody else has got it better and it's not my fault, it's someone else's fault. Well, actually, the first thing we can do every day is ask ourselves that question: how well am I doing my best to be at my best? And actually, at the heart of that question is, how well am I doing my best to regulate and manage my emotions? Because it's the emotions that are driving everything that we think and do. And if they're not helping us, then the first thing we need to do is to get better at regulating them, or in our language, developing your habit mechanic intelligence and becoming a habit mechanic.
Yeah, thanks, John. We'll talk a bit more about that as well in a moment. Just worth saying to people who are joining us live on the podcast in the Habit Mechanic University, we are scheduled, if you like, to finish at 4:30. But I think there's so much in this chapter to talk about that we're going to just continue live streaming and with this live podcast and just really get through it all and drill down into it all. So please do stay with us on the podcast. There's plenty more good stuff to come, certainly, and do pose your questions as well in the chat. So yeah, let's press on, John. I know in the book as well, you introduce a tool that used in the, I think fair to say, in the psychologist community, which is part of the chapter and part of the way in which you help people understand how they might respond when they experience a stressful event or a stressful situation. That's called PANAS, so that's the abbreviation. And I think it's the positive and negative effect schedule. It's a way of measuring, if you like, your emotions in if and when you experience a stressful situation. And in the book, you give another fascinating hypothetical example of perhaps somebody not getting a pay rise, going into a pay review meeting. If you could talk us through that, that would be so fascinating, please.
Yeah. So the positive negative effects AFEX schedule is something I actually used in my PhD work. So I was interested in making it easier for the people I was interviewing one-off or longitudinally to explain. I was using that tool to help them to explain how they were emotionally dealing with things, or how they thought their athletes were emotionally dealing with things. So, yeah, the positive and negative AFEX schedule is just basically an overview of all the different types of emotions that we experience. And I don't like to think of emotions as positive or negative. I like to think of them as helpful or unhelpful, because some of these things can be very subjective and idiosyncratic, and depending on what situation you're in, you know, being scared can be a pretty helpful emotion sometimes if you need to get out of somewhere or do something. Equally, being really positive and happy is always not always appropriate for some situations and not always helpful. So for me, it's much better to think about emotions as, is this helpful for me right now, or is it unhelpful? And if it's unhelpful, what can I do to get my attention onto or generate some emotions that are more helpful for me? So, yeah, the example I give is, imagine you're going into a peer review at work. You're feeling very confident. You're going to get the peer rise. You've been telling your friends and family, definitely getting this peer rise. You've even been thinking about what you're going to do with the money from the peer rise. And there's a house in a different area of town you've got your eye on, and you're thinking, I can go and get this house. But you go into the peer rise and you get told, the peer review, you get told you haven't got the peer rise. So the instinctive response to that, Hugh, is big disconnection of meaning systems, big loss of control. What you thought was going to happen doesn't happen. So the natural emotions that emerge from that are anger. Then you might start to feel guilty because you think you're letting your family down. Then you might start to feel a bit fearful, because you're thinking, well, is my partner going to stay with me now? Looks like I'm not a great performer at work. Can I provide for my family, etc.? And you can go on like that, almost this steady flow of potentially unhelpful emotions that are just whirling through your brain. And we can't avoid that in the first instance. That isn't actually what's going to happen. But what habit mechanics can do is they can recognize, wait a minute, these emotions are not helpful for me. So I need to do something about that. So this is where we switch on our PFC, if you like, just by doing that and noticing, being attentive when noticing, wait a minute, this isn't helpful for me. So you might start to change the meaning of the situation and thinking, well, actually, I learned some things in the peer review which were quite helpful, and they've made me realize maybe exactly what I need to do to get the pay rise in the next 6 months, or I'm not really valued here, so I'm going to go to get a role somewhere else. That might make you feel quite excited. And you might think, oh, I've got the possibility now to make my family proud of me again, etc. So emotions are, we go on these emotional journeys. If we just let Hugh and the ape brain dominate the journey, chances are that we're going to experience a lot of unhelpful emotions and feelings. We can learn how to get better at noticing these unhelpful emotions and intervening. And that's what all the habit mechanic tools are designed to do, both in the app and in the book. They're designed to make you more aware of your emotions ultimately, so that if you notice they're not helping you, you can intervene and regulate them. And by doing that, you save time, because you spend far less time thinking and doing things that are not helping you to be at your best. And if you want to know how to do that, use the Habit Mechanic app. Use the coaches in there. Use the book, because that's what this system is all about. It's about helping you to get better at spotting those unhelpful emotions and getting your attention back onto ones that are more helpful for you. And the more you practice that, the more automated it becomes, the better you're able to implicitly regulate.
Yeah, no, thanks for that, John. And again, just a reminder that if you're with us live in the Habit Mechanic University app, we are going to crack on a bit and keep live streaming, because there's so much to discuss in this chapter. We were scheduled to just be here with you until 4:30, but we're pressing on, so please do stay with us. And John, thanks for your time too. Thanks for all that insight then. I think that's an amazingly helpful overview of emotional regulation. And what I want to come on to now is, or I suppose the second part of the chapter, the second slice of this chapter, you explain that improving your emotional regulation can make you happier. In short, we can feel happy. We can think ourselves happier is a way I thought of it. We can use the insight to become happier is another way to put it. Again, how is this possible? Talk to us about that. Explain, you know, how will improving emotional regulation make us feel happier?
Yeah, so we have to start with, well, what is happiness? What does it mean? I'm sure everyone's got their own definition of that. But for me, I really like two schools of thought on this, and I put them together to make a newer understanding of what happiness means. So we've got the hedonic school of thought, which is about doing fun, exciting, immediately gratifying things. So happiness. So some scientists from the positive psychology movement talk about the happiness treadmill, the hedonic treadmill. So we're kind of taught that we can just get on this hedonic treadmill, we're going to feel great about ourselves. And you see, it's easier to do that than ever before. It's easier to eat the food that you want to eat, even though it might make you feel good in the short term, but it's not good for your long-term health. It's easier to get dopamine hits from things like social media. You can endlessly watch and stream whatever you want. We have, even though I suppose the economy is quite tight at the moment, we're still very fortunate in the Western world for what, you know, the things that we can afford to have and the level of wealth, you know, we have in the economy is superior to most periods in our history as a species. So we've got the hedonic approach, and I absolutely buy into this idea that sometimes we've got to let our hair down, we've got to have fun, we've got to give in to short-term gratification.
I was going to say, hedonic, that's derived, I think, isn't it, from the word hedonism, which most people all know, and I think there's even an all-inclusive resort in Jamaica called that.
Is that okay? Yeah, so there's absolutely, you know, that is absolutely part of experiencing very positive emotions by doing little, by expending little energy, is absolutely an important part of being happy. Letting our hair down sometimes, you know, is part of that. But doing it all the time, being on the hedonic treadmill all the time, doesn't seem to make people happy in the long term. So, you know, and we also see this in the workplace. So businesses go, well, we need our people to be happier, to be more engaged. So we're going to get them, we're going to put them free food or have more ping pong tables, free beer, whatever it is. But the other big chunk of feeling happy is, the other school of thought is eudaimonia. So the eudaimonic experience, which is about delaying short-term gratification. It's about achieving meaningful goals, things that take a lot of effort and energy and don't give you immediate gratification, but when you achieve the goal, you feel really good about yourself. And in order to achieve those types of goals, to have those types of experiences, we have to delay gratification. So we have to kind of keep human, the ape brain, and arm's length and say, it's okay, we are going to feel good when we achieve this thing, when we finish the book, or we put the app together, or we submit the report, or we get the next pair eyes, or my daughter has lovely straight teeth because we've paid for the braces, or whatever it is. But we have to strike that balance between the two things, between hedonism and eudaimonia, and to experience more eudaimonic experiences, this is where emotional regulation is key, because we need to, we're going to have to experience a little bit of, naturally our brain's going to be telling us, well, you know, stop writing the report because there are more fun things to be doing right now. So we've got to regulate those feelings and say, well, wait a minute, we're actually doing this because we're working towards something that's bigger and more meaningful. And I think, yeah, what the learning war is doing is it's making it more difficult than ever before to experience or to have eudaimonic experiences. That's what's happening. And there's a third part to the happiness equation, which is getting your brain working really well, which means good sleep, good diet, good exercise. That's the basis for everything, good social relationships. So it's harder than ever to get your brain working well and have eudaimonic experiences. It's easier than ever to have hedonic experiences and to have far too many hedonic experiences. And we see this in the data. The NHS, the National Health Service in the UK, is projecting that in 15 years' time, I think it's either 39 or 37% of working age people, 39 or 37% of those, more of those, will have long-term health issues. And of that top 10 categories, actually, anxiety and depression is one of those lists, is one of the top 10. Also, you know, cancer is on there as well. For me, a big driver of that is because we are being driven too much by our hedonic emotions, or ultimately by the eight brain and hue. You know, doing your exercise today can be an hedonic experience. So my goal today is to do 10 miles of exercise. Starts with a run in the morning, and I do little bits of throughout the day, and then I do a longer walk in the evening. It isn't immediately gratifying to do that. It's not like eating a donut, or I'd rather sometimes just sit down and, you know, watch TV or whatever. But when you do it, when you achieve it, you feel good about yourself. You know, that's a mini eudaimonic experience. So yeah, that's, we can learn how to get better at striking that balance, and emotional regulation is at the heart of it.
Okay, thanks for that, John. As we do approach the conclusion, and similar in the chapter, this theme, this subject comes at the end, towards the end of the chapter. How can we improve our emotional regulation skills then? How can we start to practice being better at it and striking this balance between hedonism and eudaimonia?
Well, if you're a habit mechanic and you're listening to this, chances are, well, you're already doing it. So at the heart of getting better at regulating your emotions, we need to do more intelligent self-watching and more intelligent planning. So if we think about something like the T-plan, that's an intelligent self-watching and an intelligent planning tool. So that's we can say the same for the 3-to-1 end-of-day reflection. Also, if we're using our fam story to create longer term goals and connect those with our short term goals, that's another way of doing it. In the app, we've got the long term and monthly goal section, we've got the daily goal section. So all the habit mechanic tools are ultimately designed to help you to get better at automating emotional regulation. But it's key that we have daily tools that we're using, weekly tools, and monthly/bi-monthly tools. And if you actually go to chapter 36 of the Habit Mechanic book, I kind of unpack all the tools in those time frames. These are the daily tools. These are the weekly tools. These are the longer term tools. So yeah, that's what the Habit Mechanic approach is all about. And the toolkit we provide and the coaching we provide is all designed to help you to get better at regulating your emotions And I think emotional regulation and emotions are so misunderstood. They're often added to a list of important things in our lives, but for me, they are the foundation of everything, because they are the drivers of what we pay attention to, and therefore the driver of what we get good at, for better or for worse. So if you keep paying attention to how rubbish you are and how your life will never be where you want it to be, well, that's what you'll get good at thinking about, and therefore it'll be much easier to think about that thing, and then it just becomes a big negative self-fulfilling cycle. Whereas habit mechanics would catch themselves doing that, and then they would say, well, actually, I need to work with the stress coach in the app, for example, or I need to work with a confidence coach in the app, and they start to build better habits by using that.
Yeah, thanks for that, John. Thanks for taking us through chapter 14 in such great detail. We've just got time to pose a question to you. I know a question that you sometimes get, and you touched on it, you have touched on it before, but what you're saying here is essentially, correct me if I'm wrong, by improving our emotional regulation, it's not that you'll never feel stressed again. You will experience stress. It's just that you will deal with it much better, in simple terms.
Yeah, stress is a natural neurobiological response in our brain. We're never going to, and we don't want to get rid of the stress response. It's there for a reason. If you hear that, bang, there might be a reason to pay attention to it, right? So that's what the stress response is there to do. Unfortunately, our stress responses are getting triggered far too often in the world that we live in. We're being bombarded, we're being overwhelmed, and if we don't know what we're doing, we end up not processing out the stress each day and each week, and therefore we don't sleep as well as we need to. You know, in our tools, we encourage you to create little stressors. Well, what do I need to do differently today? At the end, or what can I do differently in the next 24 hours at the end of the 3-to-1? But we try to help you to do it in the most helpful way that you can. So yeah, this is not about eliminating stress. This is about striking a better balance between positive and negative emotions, and making sure that the mix of those is more helpful than unhelpful. So that's Barbara Fredrickson's work, 3-to-1 reflection as a minimal, 3 positive emotions, and with 1 helpful, but with, sorry, 3 positive emotions with 1 negative is a helpful combination of emotions. But that's a minimal ratio. Sometimes we're going to have to go up to 11-to-1 for it to be a helpful ratio, because the 1 can be so dominant. So yeah, we're not going to eliminate stress. Stress is a really important part of our lives. We just need to get better at managing it. And that's what the habit mechanic approach will show you how to do.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, John. That's been great. Really, really fascinating once again. Thanks for everyone who's joined us live in the Habit Mechanic University for this live podcast, live streamed. Just before we do sign off, John, you mentioned the something that's recently appeared in Habit Mechanic University app, the coaches, as you referred to them. It'd be great just to give people a reminder of exactly what they can see and how they can employ and use and apply these amazing new tools.
Yeah, so we've introduced a number of what we call coaches into the app. We've got motivation coach, habit analysis coach, stress coach, productivity coach, confidence coach, pressure coach, learning coach, leadership coach, all there, all available 24/7. And they give you step-by-step guidance of how to build better habits in those areas. You immediately get benefits. Literally a minute, you'll improve any of those areas you want to work on. They're accompanied by a new tool we've created, which is Willpower, your personal coach. It's, if people are familiar with ChatGPT, it's our version of that. So it knows our learnings, it knows our systems, and it's there to give you 24/7 support. And each of those coaches, they give you step-by-step instructions of how to build better habits in any area of your life that you want to. So if you're looking to build better habits in any of those areas, go check out the coaches and work with them. They're always there. And of course, on top of that, we have these live sessions that we're running. We're running 3 times a week at the moment, live sessions where you can interact with us, you can ask us questions. On top of that, we have a back catalogue of training and resources, and we have the toolkits that are designed to help you to build better habits in these areas. So yeah, you know, the Habit Mechanic University is 24/7 coaching support to help you improve your happiness, performance. And we know that if you keep practicing and working with those coaches over about 90 days, you're going to see over 25% improvements in your happiness and your performance. So it's there, it's in your pocket now, but it will happen by magic. You have to use it, you have to go in there, but it only takes a few minutes each day. So yeah, use the tool.
Thanks very much, John. That's great. As you say, plenty coming up live in the Habit Mechanic University. We have another change challenge coaching session tomorrow, and then next week, 2 change challenge coaching sessions and a live masterclass as well, live streamed. And that live masterclass is about improving sleep, diet and exercise. So well worth logging in for that. John, anything you'd like to say to just sign off?
Yeah, just thank you to people for tuning in live, but also listening on the recorded pod as well. Life is complex. We are being bombarded. It's easier than ever for those unhelpful emotions to rear their heads and dominate our attention. But it doesn't have to be that way. We can learn how to regulate them. That is at the heart. We don't use that language very often, but it's at the heart of everything we're talking about in the Habit Mechanic approach. So you can definitely get better at regulating your emotions, building more implicit emotional capacities. And what I've always found so fascinating with the Habit Mechanic approach is you just never know which habit you're working on right now might be the one that gives you this big leap forwards in your life. And it's fascinating, actually, in the app where I'm hearing more and more people talking about super habits and recognizing, actually, if I do that one thing, that makes such a big difference in my day. But that's why we say you're only ever one habit away.
Thanks for listening. Remember, if you want to get your business off to a great start in January, get in touch to discuss how our Habit Mechanic keynotes or workshops can equip your people with practical skills that help them build super habits in 5 minutes. Or if you want to earn $100,000 a year working part-time by launching your own coaching business, we guarantee to help you do that in just 13 hours. Get in touch with us today to learn more about becoming a certified Habit Mechanic coach who can transform people's lives and is recognized as a world leader in the field. For more details, contact us via the website. The link is in the podcast notes. Or if you want to feel better and do better every day, download the Habit Mechanic University app from your app store. Thanks again for listening.